Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy Radio Show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Well, here were our assignments from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
All right.
Friday was, am I not destroying my enemies when I make friends with them? This is an excellent example of the power of redirecting attention. The voices in conditioned mind want to call someone an enemy. The voices in someone else's head want to call me an enemy. If I go to conditioned mind for information, I'm bound to find enemies. It's possible to turn attention away from yet another something wrong, not enough, ego-maintaining conversation and to direct attention to the friendly nature of this year now. Today, notice how much friendlier the world is when attention is with this year now. Record and listen. Be observant if you would have a pure heart, for something is born to you in consequence of every action. If you would have a pure heart, can sound as if we do not have a pure heart and must pay close attention to get one. But we know that's not true. Purity is an attribute of the authentic nature of all that is, and that's what we all are. But do we always know that? No. We often experience that which animates as a theory and sense it only on those rare occasions when we realize we've been present, those times when we come to presence and feel gratitude or project beauty. So perhaps Mr. Rumi is encouraging us to pay close attention and feel the purity of our heart and let our choices flow from that awareness. Today, pay very close attention, looking for an experience of the purity of the heart rather than simply waiting for that awareness to come to you. Record and listen. And on Sunday, anything that is given can be at once taken away. We have to learn never to expect anything, and when something comes, it's no more than a gift on loan. We're often reminded in practice that people would not speak to anyone else, especially a child, in the ugly ways the self-hating voices of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate talk to them. Why do people allow that to go on? Because there's a deep belief not only that these voices are me, but the me being spoken to deserves that treatment. As we get clearer about what those voices are, about what is being spoken to, and about our role in ending the abuse, we begin to move more fully into the conscious, compassionate awareness that can save that suffering human being. The human being is no longer the me who deserves to be mistreated, but is clearly a unique expression of life worthy of all admiration and respect. The human incarnation we're enjoying is a gift on loan from life, a loan that will expire far too soon. Today, how will you treat yourself from awareness that you're not the owner of you and that this life is a gift on loan?
Well, gosh. Those are some powerful places to look.
Exactly.
I wonder what happened.
Well, let's find out.
All right.
Sorry, Sherry, I'm having a little bit of trouble trying to get people unmuted. Hang on 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is the first caller I've been able to unmute, so here we go. First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Well, that didn't work either. Hang on.
We all know that technology is a fickle friend.
First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lori calling from Asheville.
Hey, Lori.
Hey, Lori.
Hi. Wow. These are just wonderful, wonderful invitations. I'm particularly struck by the one about anything that is given can be at once taken away, and
mm-hmm.
how to know that I'm not the owner. And I just, you know, that's what it just touches me so deeply, that life being on loan and mm-hmm. and what that calls for. You know, it's like to call for, well, okay, then what? How, if in this responsibility of being here and just being alive, how then would life guide that to really bring all that can be experienced in that form mm-hmm. of, oh yeah, it's just a gift, you
yeah.
know, here's the,
yes,
life is a gift, yeah.
Yeah, and so if your dearest friend gave you a treasured object to care for, how would you care for it? To me, that's kind of that's what we're looking at, right? Because that's what has happened. Our dearest friend has given us a treasured object to care for.
And it's such a different perspective. It spins the attention around and to say, yeah, mm-hmm. this is a cherished gift. This moment is a cherished gift. And
yes.
and so I'm really, really grateful for that just reminder yeah. every step along the way of, well, here it is. This is the cherished gift, this moment here.
Yeah.
How is it?
And
how
this person, this person experiencing this moment. Right, that everything about that human being, everything, including that human being's experience of the present moment, is the gift.
It is, isn't it? So it goes in all
yeah.
directions. It comes in,
yeah.
it's experience, it goes out, and then when there's no separation from any of it. There was something when I was talking with somebody earlier today about how, and when we're in unconditional love, it again, it's not an identity. It's that life is coming through as unconditional love, and then it's going out, you know, coming through, visiting here, and then
yes.
going back, returning to unconditional love, and that's
yes.
the whole that precious nature of the moment of just circling around in the world and the breath and the ground of unconditional love, which is really all that
mm-hmm.
is. And when I get distracted from it by worry about something wrong and some of the patterns that are being seen in the email class, which is really very interesting to have the perspective from all the different enneatypes to say, yeah, well, how is that living here? And how is that somehow a barrier to the whole practice of life as a gift and the precious moment and being alive in this human and all of it. So,
yes.
I don't know, as usual,
yeah.
it all comes together in such a divine,
well,
wonderful way.
It does, doesn't it? And I was looking at that, Lori, this morning. First of all, I want to just say what a thrill it is that we're out there having conversations about unconditional love. Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. It's
extraordinary in and of itself. Yeah. And then with the email class, to look at, I was just talking with Ashwini about this a while back, that at first I thought, now why are we doing this? I mean, it's interesting, but why are we doing this? What is the point of this email class, if you will? And what I got to is it's beginning to separate out for us, to help us see more clearly that this identity that we call I, is not monolithic. You know, it's not, I'm not this way. And then everything gets kind of folded into that, and there's the identity. And we don't really need to look too closely at the various details because, you know, this is just how I am. And then to, you know, to have this, okay, well, now I am acting out what Enneagram people call the perfection of the one, right? So there's that. Then now, oh, okay, well, there's the helpful, resentful two. There's the, you know, so with each one of them, we get to see how when ego is, takes us over, we're acting out in ways, thinking and behaving in ways that are like every human being on the planet.
Right.
Which
right.
Helps us to see, oh, this is not unique at all. Ego is the most ununique thing in the world.
It's so ununique, and it's so unreal.
Yes. Yeah. It's like just putting on, it's like having all these different pairs of glasses, right? And
yeah.
We don't putting them on. But, you know, here's this little hand putting on the glasses, and we look around and say, oh, that. Oh, that. Oh, yeah, that. Uh-huh. Oh, that. Oh, I hate that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, that's wrong. Oh, that. You know, all day long, and just don't
all
notice that the lenses are coming and going. Yeah. All right. Well,
wow.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you. Thank you, Bo. Thanks, everybody. Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye, Lori. Thank you. You know, Sherry, two things stood out for me in that conversation. One, that question about how do we steward something when it's given to us as a precious gift?
Mm-hmm.
It's that if when we ask the question, it's almost like, how do we, well, I don't know. But it's such an intuitive knowing of the attitude that we would bring to something when that is so, right? That
uh-huh.
when we ask that question, it's not a looking to that knowing. It's a looking to that conditioned place of, well, how would I do that? Well, that's what the non-separation gives us the information on how to do that. Of course we know how to deal with something, how to be with something that's precious. We bring all the love and attention that we can give to it, right? It's the most intuitive place that we could drop into.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And it proves to us that that is possible for us.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to go on to my second point, but it proves that
please
it is.
Do. No, make your second point.
Well, the counterpoint to that about the email class is something we've been looking at, that if I just decide this is me, then what I don't see is all the ways in which ego still operates that I'm not in touch with that prevents
yes.
authenticity from being expressed. So
yeah.
in some ways, there's a block to all the ways I could love or care for something or steward the gift, because all of it is not in my awareness, because I'm just comfortable that this is the only place I have to work and look and transcend.
Ooh, that is such a powerful point.
Yes.
And the way you express that, the manipulation that of ego is so obvious, right? It's
yeah.
You don't need to worry about any of that. You know what your issue is. So you're doing fine. You're looking at your issue, which is this, and then all
That's right.
this other stuff just is right there, out of conscious awareness. Wow, that's sobering.
Yes, well, and it's what you were pointing out, I think, in the email class several times, that so I'm not, I know that this is what my karma is, so I'm going to choose unconditional love. But what that means is all of the places in which my issue or karma is not defined, I'm not choosing unconditional love, and I don't know it. So I'm not
yeah.
able to steward the gift of life in those moments.
Yeah. Well, and it's really sad because I've been fooled into believing that I'm doing the right thing. I mean, I'm still looking for that same egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate for information about how I'm doing, and I'm told that I'm doing fine. I'm really working out my own salvation diligently. And of course, then all this other stuff is left unnoticed. That's really powerful. Yeah. So, in fact, the way that we've been talking about that lately is how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate uses everything, everything for its own purposes. And so people learning to turn attention to unconditional love, that's wonderful, But if we turn attention to unconditional love and idea what attention has been on before that, then we are extremely vulnerable because, you know, ego can just wake us up periodically and say, oh, you need to choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. Here, I'm practicing. I'm in great shape. But what happened for those hours in between where I was not choosing unconditional love? Where was I? What yeah. kind of karma was being reinforced?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's big.
Very big. All right. Here is our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. It's Jane in Colorado.
Hi, Jane.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. I am in the middle of a workshop and am so grateful for the daily assignments. I'm just... They're my touchstones, you know, my pure heart, and keep walking even though you're in hell. it's been such...
To keep going through.
Keep right. going through, yes, yes. I am so incredibly grateful for the support. So I am being present and... I feel like I'm awake and I'm aware of what conditioning is doing, and I still have pain.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just, you know, it's what just a little bit of the content is that I had quite a few of my family members here last week, and it was obvious that one of them is drinking a lot. And so... Sherry, you've given me great guidance over the years about stop projecting. So I, you know, flipped the mirror and looked at my own childhood issues having an alcoholic father and, you know, just the pain that that brought up. So I've been doing, you know, like the two-handed recording and listening, and my mentor just says, you know, be with it. Nothing's wrong. I'm not doing something wrong just because I'm not elated. It feels like that this is part of life. But sometimes in practice, I feel like if I'm not, like, jubilant, I'm doing something wrong. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. And Jane, since you're looking at this the way you're looking at it, I'm gonna suggest something that's gonna be familiar to you, but I'm not sure you're applying it in this situation.
Thank you.
And that is to turn attention directly to the pain.
Turn attention
not
to what?
Directly to the pain.
Oh.
Not the story, not the label.
Okay.
So. When you think about an alcoholic father, and there's the feeling in the body that goes with that we label pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
To begin to look directly, to focus attention directly on those sensations without any labels or stories to accompany them.
Ooh, wow, that might be a new skill for me.
Yep, yep, yep. And anybody listening in who suffers with anxiety or any kind of that sort of, especially something like anxiety or depression or anger, well, anything, I guess, to be in the story enough to find experiences being held in the body, and then dropping, turning attention away from the story, go directly to the sensations.
Yeah, I knew that I needed your help here because I, you know, was like doing the thing of, you know, being a seven. I want to just run and fix the pain, but it was, you know, just sit with it. But, you know, it still hasn't shifted.
That's right. Yeah. What we get pulled into is that means sitting with the story, with the labels, with all the meaning. That's what we're sitting with, and that'll never shift, right? Because it's being maintained. We're not actually, it's being maintained. And so to draw, there's where we want to turn attention. You can turn attention to unconditional love and focus attention then on that sensation in your body. What's holding that whole conglomerate of meaning and story and labels and orientation and that sort of thing. And that's where the well-being comes from, because now you're actually aligning yourself with life rather than with karma.
Yes, it's this practice is so important, and I'm just seeing that I do all of our unbelievably wonderful, powerful techniques, and then conditioning sneaks in and says, and yeah, but he still drinks too much, you know.
That's right.
You know, about the family member, you know, and it's just like,
yeah.
No, wait a minute. Stop it. You know?
That's right. That's right. Oh, we're back up in the head. We're back up in conditioned mind.
Yeah.
And so that is the progression, right? To stay with the sensations, to watch them fall apart, to realize that it's the story that brings them back in. So it's a self-referencing loop, right? What we're doing is dissolving those sensations and dropping the story. And then there's nothing that takes you back there. Now you're in a completely different place to look at what's happening. And, of course, you're going to be looking at it from unconditional love rather than ego judgment.
Yes, that's so powerful. Okay. The story brings it back in. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
You are so welcome.
Deep, deep bow. Thank you.
Okay. Joe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jane. That conversation reminds me of Teresa Lisu, Sherry, where the story is about this person who's having the difficulty, and she swears she's going to make her best friend. And it's that, mm-hmm. with that pain, that the there's such a movement of avoidance that we're conditioned to have, and that ability to just go for it, to make friends with it, in some senses is the quote about the pure heart, right? That through the pain is when we discover the purity. And if we approach it from that place of friendship, of getting intimate with it, then the experience is so transformative.
Uh-huh. But we begin to realize that is the precious gift.
Yes.
That the friend is
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And whether it's the relative who's drinking too much, or the story about what all of that means, or what's wrong with that person, or what's wrong with me, for all of that is the precious gift that's going to, as you say, as we attend to that, we could say work through it, but that's not exactly how we approach it. But as it's embraced, then we realize that our ability to love unconditionally has just expanded.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
So big.
All right. We have time for another caller. Here's our next caller.
Oh,
you're live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Ashwini. It's Ramita.
Hello, Ramita.
Hello. It was a really full weekend.
It was, wasn't it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And
no reason to be bored.
No, absolutely not. And I had quite a reversal. My mother, unfortunately, Friday morning, fell and broke her hip.
Oh.
So, you know, my day on Friday looked very different than what, you know, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, you know.
Yes, yes. We see the wisdom in those quotes, huh?
Exactly.
Wow.
So I ended up, it was like a busman's holiday. You know, I went and spent a lot of time at the hospital on one of the units that I often make rounds on. And I was a family member helping a patient, not a professional. And in some ways it was really kind of liberating, because I recognized how little control I had and how willing I was to just say, okay, I'm going to look for that pure heart in me and in the people around me, and that's going to be my focus of attention.
And I bet you found it.
I really did. And it had this timeless quality and this participating, you know, everyone recognized everyone was doing their best. Even when things weren't going smoothly, everyone was really doing their best. And it really, really helped to not go into the stories about how it should be. And it helped me see, too, my professional role in a different way.
Aha. Uh-huh. Because most of the time, you're one of those other people.
Yep. On the other side of the bed.
Yeah. And doing your best for people who are injured, sick, whatever it is, and their family members. Mm-hmm. I have to be sensitive to them and what they're going through and their family members and how worried and concerned they are, and probably unconscious, as we all know the possibility of being. Yeah. Yeah. So seeing both experiencing both sides of it at once.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure how this all ties in, but I think you and Ashwini will do that for me. The efforts that I made to communicate, you know, what I understood was going on and how my mother was responding to treatment, and seeing how, you know, sometimes it landed, but more often than not, it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, putting myself back into the other role and just saying, let me use that. Let me help that be more pure-hearted when I'm listening, and really reflect and recognize that there's probably a lot that I'm not seeing as a quote-unquote professional.
Yes, and the application of that in every moment of life, right? We just don't realize how complete is our reliance on my experience of this in this moment.
Yes.
Actually present. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, well, just like you were talking with Ashwini about, you know, how the enneatypes filter so much of what's going on, you know, make the assumption. If I'm going to make an assumption, let's assume I'm not seeing 90% of what there is to see.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And when we get the importance for ego of not being wrong, then, I mean, we can see in ourselves and we have the experience. Of course, other people do it more, Ramita. We know that more than, say, you and I. You know, I'm going to go to what makes me right. And that's just it. So I'm not, I mean, I can see that other people have other perspectives, but they're wrong.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's just, again, sobering and encouraging to see that as a process.
Yeah, and it's so easy to get distracted and get moving quickly again and forget that, but I'm so grateful for Project Joy Radio, this time every day in the midst of my workday, because I'm on the East Coast. It clears the decks, and I come back to presence and have a much better shot at remembering to be here.
Get to that place of, right, this is what we're about.
Yeah, right. I'm not right.
Yeah, right, well, and it just brings so much compassion, doesn't it? When we can have that compassion for ourselves, right, which is what we talk about all the time. Because if I'm excluded from that compassion, if I'm held to these rigid standards of how a person needs to be, then, I just don't have a hope of anything other than holding other people to those same rigid standards of ego. Right? So when we can embrace ourselves the way you're talking about, to see, I can recognize some of that in myself. You know, I see people getting busy and assuming that they have the whole picture and they know what's right and that they know what to do and that this is the right thing to do, that we can all get caught up in
when one another You're beginning to fade out, Sherry, so I didn't get that last statement. There, you're back.
Oh, goodness gracious. Well, it's just the bottom line is, as we see these and we're embracing compassion because the precious gift, as we approach the human being that we call me, in that way, then that's what extends to everyone else. We see what's happened to us. We see how we get caught up and go unconscious, and it's no longer a process. It's not an but an opportunity to understand.
Yes, yes, and then we get to embrace the full catastrophe, treasure ourselves, and go happy.
Exactly. We have a plan.
Thank you so much.
A three-step plan. I love it. Thank you, Ramita.
Thanks, Ramita. Deep gusher. What a lovely call, Sherry, and what a lovely way to end the show, and a perfect segue to our next assignment, as usual. Here it is. No snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. When in the grip of ego, it's easy to hop from one side of the responsibility duality to the other. I did it. It's my fault. Or, hey, I didn't do it. It's got nothing to do with me. It can be tricky to see that both identifications are no more than expressions of an illusion of being separate from life, code word ego. Being jerked between guilt and blame is a familiar place when we're identified with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. We don't need to look far into society to recognize that process as a cultural obsession. Today, let yourself explore what responsible is, and there's no guilt or blame involved. Record and listen.
Nice. Yeah, that does take us to that compassion, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, exactly so. All right.
Thank you,
Sherry.
Ashwini. Yeah. Thanks to everybody. And Ramita said it.
Sherry, you're gone.
Oh.
Sherry.
I'm right here. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Well, I think we stopped hearing you. So. You said Ramita said and.
And goodbye.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Sherry. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.